This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DeFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 23 of Muscles and Management. Before I get going, I just kind of want to apologize in advance for my voice. It sounds not bad right now, but I am battling through a pretty tough chest and head cold, so it gets pretty raspy as I talk, so please bear with me with that. I'm doing my best. I didn't want to lose a week of an episode because of it, so we're pushing along. With that being said, I really just want to say, if you haven't already, check out the last two episodes with Les Nozzle and Carlton Salters. If you're someone who's just looking for keys to, you know, making strength training effective for athletes, you know, finding out some ways to make your training better and how it can improve your overall game, and no matter what sport you're playing, you really need to check out the Les Nozzle episode. And if you're a baseball or softball player, coach, parent, and you're just, you know, interested in finding out some of the ways to make your swing more effective in terms of a hamstring load versus a glute load with your lower half and how that could set you up for success, I really, really recommend the Carlton Salters episode. So those two guys were great. Check those out if you haven't already. With that being said, let's talk velocity-based training for a second. There's some talk about it on Twitter, online, and it's something that's been done for years, but has really made its way to the forefront of, popular training, so to speak. When we're talking about velocity-based training, we're looking at something where, we're emphasizing the recording of the speed in which our movements are performed. So looking at like the big three, the squat, the deadlift, the bench press, you know, taking a look at not only how much weight is on the bar, and obviously a lot of us emphasize how strong, athletes are and how much weight we can move, but also the speed in which we're moving the barbell. So it goes just beyond, the load and how much weight is on the bar. And if we further that, and I've mentioned this in previous episodes, but if you're a new listener, we look at the force velocity curve. And think of the force velocity curve, and I'm going to post a couple visuals when I post the episode on this curve, along with, some speed recommendations for, velocity-based training for anyone new to the velocity-based training as a whole. Looking at the force velocity curve, and, we're talking about in a movement, we can, any movement, it could be a barbell movement, an athletic movement, a jump, a sprint, a throw as a pitcher, whatever it is. A certain portion of every movement is force-based, so based on your strength, or velocity-based, so based on your elasticity or your ability to rapidly load and fire and move your weight as fast as possible. So those are the two basic ways that all movements are produced, right? Velocity-based training looks at this curve, and it kind of lets us have an idea of different loads and different speeds we can use to target either movements that are more force-dependent, so more, strength-based, or more velocity-based, right? The great thing about velocity-based training is that particular athletes rely on one more than the other in terms of their movement. So if an athlete needs to get faster, they could either need to build more force in their movement, which would be heavier weights at a lower speed, or more velocity, lower weights at a higher speed. So either improving your brute force output and how much strength you have, or the rate in which you can display your strength. So you might have a brutally strong guy, but he might not be very good at displaying that strength in a fast manner. So he will struggle to display speed. So the force velocity curve and velocity-based training allows us protocol to build these attributes we may be lacking. If you're lacking velocity, you're going to want to work with some lower weights at a higher speed, moving the bar as fast as possible or performing the movement in a faster way. So think, in terms of jumps, let's just say a more velocity-based jump would be a jump that's performed at full speed without any weight. And maybe someone who's, lacking in the force department, maybe perform a loaded jump that's slower, but the load, makes them use more of their force in the movement. So you can kind of, improve either of those two things. Taking that a step further, and I will post a visual on this, the basic components of velocity-based training. You have your absolute strength. So that's, like I said, moving the bar not that fast, or the movement's not that fast, but there's a lot of load involved and there's a lot of force. Then you have strength-speed and speed-strength. Think about it this way. Strength comes first in the phrasing of strength-speed, and speed comes first in the phrasing of speed-strength. So depending on which one of those you're working on, strength or force will be more utilized in the strength-speed component, and you'll have a little bit of force, a little bit of velocity sprinkled in to kind of, help you get used to using velocity with a force-based movement. And then in speed-strength, it's a lesser load at a faster speed where you're, really learning to use velocity and build velocity in your movement. So, and then you have your pure velocity, obviously, which is like an unloaded movement, like a sprint or a jump. That's a basic sense. I'll provide a visual on that. So with that said, I would like you to make notes on what I'm saying, what I'm saying to previously, to follow along during the show. So make a quick note of that force velocity curve. Use the visuals that I'm giving you to kind of help follow along throughout the show and make sense to a lot of what is being discussed. Understand those ranges when you hear speed strength and strength speed. Know what those are. Know that one is a little faster with less weight in terms of strength, speed strength, and know that strength speed is a little more weight with a little bit less velocity. So have the curves that I'm providing in the visuals in front of you so you can understand what's being talked about throughout the show. With that being said, I don't want to make this too long. Excited to have Pat Robles on today. Just talking all things velocity-based training with a guy that has had a lot of success using velocity-based training to both monitor the readiness and preparation of his athletes and also determine weaknesses or links in the chain that need to be strengthened, whether it's a velocity deficiency or a force deficiency. So I really hope you guys enjoy this interview. And please, like I said, use the visuals provided when I post the show to kind of help along so you can follow. All right, everyone, without further ado, I'd like to welcome on Pat Robles. Pat, thank you so much for coming on. Excited to have you.
Hey, it's good. It's good to be on, Jerry. I really appreciate it. It's good to be on, with you. You do some really good things. I've really taken notice of a lot of the stuff that you do, so I'm really looking forward to being on this podcast with you.
I appreciate that. I've been looking forward to having you on for a while. Going to talk some, about some awesome stuff with velocity-based training, how you develop your guys, and looking forward to, helping some people out in terms of, what they're doing with their barbell training. So thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
I guess first things first that I kind of want to start off with, I kind of gave a little bit of a background to listeners on velocity-based training. I'm going to try to limit how much I talk. As you can tell, my voice is pretty shot. I'm going through a cold right now, so I'm going to let you take the floor on a lot of this, but I kind of gave a little bit of a background on velocity-based training, so the listeners have a little bit of an idea of what that's about. And I guess my first question I want to pose to you would be, what are some of the most glaring weaknesses you see with some of your freshmen when they arrive on campus, in terms of strength, movement issues, stuff like that?
Yeah, definitely. One of the strength issues that you see with freshmen coming on campus is, definitely to start is the inability of the hips, either right. It's usually with the rear hip on a lot of the kids that we're seeing coming in. And also, it's shoulder mobility, external and internal rotations as well. It's something that we look for, most of the kids that are, bringing into campus, they just don't have, some of the programming that is to be able to do some of these things. So, that's some things that we really look into. And it just gets, some of the times it just gets really, it's really to the point where we want to make sure they're in a good stage, good standing with their mobility, and working through, the strength training part aspect of it to be able to be, good enough and ready so we can improve that absolute strength number. So that's one of the things that, we like to see, because we obviously work in jumping in and ready, trying to improve the absolute strength. So we're trying to improve those numbers a lot in the weight room. But at the same time is, we want to make sure when we first get there, we want to make sure we're moving right and being able to be in good movement screening and mobility so we can, we don't have no issues as far as lower back, on the deadlifts or squat issues or anything like that. So we want to have the best possible outcome for them to improve on their absolute strength versus just hopping them on. You know, so you'll see some that will be, here's a strength program, go with it and run with it and try to get big.
Yeah.
You know, what we're really trying to do is work on these key things to be able to allow them to, you know, move. We're trying to get to see what that plateau or what that high number is in their absolute strength, so we're getting a better understanding of how strong the kid is overall.
Yeah, so your primary first goal is to make sure the movement, you know, is quality, but then you're just trying to improve that, you know, raw force and absolute strength right off the bat.
Most definitely, most definitely.
Do you see when a lot of these kids come in that they're just lacking a tremendous amount of strength, mostly, a lot of these kids?
Yes, a lot of the kids are lacking a lot of strength. And what we do as well, we go into, we use via push band, the bar sensor. We actually measure on their power output, so we'll do the body weight, their body weight, pushing their body weight, and we'll measure that power output.
Okay.
And then we'll also measure what power output they're doing when they're able to get to that absolute strength. So whenever they're doing the 2 to 3 rep range, we're measuring that power output and seeing, you know, what, okay, this kid's got, I'll start out one kid we had, his name is, you know, we had Braden Babcock. He was only putting out 724 watts of power on his bench.
Okay.
So I knew there was some T-spine, there was stuff in the, you know, his shoulder mobility was actually something that we really need to work on. And at the end of the year, the kid now is pushing out 3,000, he's pushing over 3,000 watts on his bench press. So that is something we like to look at and monitor real closely, so we'll know an exact amount. You know, well, this kid, he may is getting stronger, but let's actually view this with the data and see, okay, the power output numbers is saying, you know, obviously if he's going up in weight, we like that, but I also want to see if he's going up in power output and average and his speed.
Yeah, because it's, you know, the weight is great, but you also want to see, like, rate of force, how fast can they move that weight, how fast can they display their strength, especially in baseball with, you know, throwing and hitting are movements that are very ballistic and fast in nature.
No doubt, definitely. Yeah.
So would you say, you know, we talked a little bit about movement and strength right off the bat. Would you say that you've seen a lot of you know, good results in terms of cleaning up movement, you know, in a general sense and sport-specific sense as strength improves?
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, and I think the quality of movement, you know, through the movements and varying the loads and the weight is improving these guys on a different scale of being able to improve on the absolute strength. So we have kids, if they start out and we have them at a number that we'll have kids come in and they'll be, I had a kid that was he was a 500 deadlifter. He's 215 pounds. He's over 500 deadlifter.
Okay.
He's a 295 bench guy and he's a 500 squat guy. Okay. But the guy's 83, 85 on the mound. So, you know, the scale back to his program is, the kid's absolute strength is obviously there. The numbers say he's there. So we're going, and then I like to test his I like to be in the strength speeds range, you know. So we'll go 0.8 to about 1 millisecond on that, and we'll measure that, and we'll see that, you know, the kid can't move the velocity range that it's not that fast, okay? And his velocity percentage loss from each set is dropping significantly. So then we look back, and I look at the screening notes, and then I look, and this is like on, you know, deadlifts and squats, that this kid needs real work on improving the area of his mobility in his hips, but he's got to be able to move the weight a lot faster. So the programming for him is just bumped down to where we've got strictly working on 30 to 40% of his one rep max range, and we're really monitoring the velocity range of what he's putting out. Okay, so we'll monitor the velocity range of what he's putting out for about 2 weeks, okay? And once that 2 weeks is done, then we'll see, we'll go back and we'll screen again. So if we screen again, and then we see that he's in good standing or he's improving, okay, then we want to see with that weight how much his average and his peak power output is going and how much power out percentage he is losing on that. And that's a great deal that'll help the kid as far as some things like that actually, so he was actually, from him being able to be in a, you know, 30 to 40% and working that at strength speed, phase in the weight room, it actually helped him be able to improve on his absolute strength numbers. So he was a 515 deadlifter. Now he's at a 585 deadlift.
Okay.
So that little movement and varying the loads with him helped him get into good mobility standing. So that's one of the things that we do as well with the movement screenings. If we see that the kid is really strong, let's bump down, let's scale back to 30 to 40%, and let's get him through a movement phase training, and let's monitor the velocity range of what he's going at, and then let's go back and screen him again, and then we'll be able to know that if the kid's, with his hips or whatever he's got going on, we can know if he's improving on that, because the numbers, you know, when he retests for his absolute strength, the numbers should be a significantly increase of what he's doing, because he's now able to move a lot better. Even though he was stronger before, he was not able to move weight a little bit faster, and some stuff may have been locked up. So now we got everything open more freely and wide open, that it's going to help him to get that little extra strength that he needs in the glutes, that he needs in the hips, to be able to move, you know, a heavier weight.
Yeah, so just for the listener, just to have an idea. So basically, in terms of, you know, we could look at it in terms of lifts and in movement in general, two things basically come into play. You have your force, which is like your brute strength and how much pure force you can put out. And then you have your velocity. So basically, how much of elasticity or just rate of force is involved in the movement. And what you're basically saying is, some of these guys might have the raw force production, but they might lack in the velocity side. So you're adjusting, and that's part of VBT and force velocity profiling. You're adjusting the programs based on, you know, what particular area an athlete struggles in. So like this, you know, one guy you mentioned in particular had great numbers, but, you know, the velo wasn't there when he was throwing, and, you know, you basically figured out that he lacked in the velocity component.
Yeah, that's definitely correct. We, like I said, we like to scale back to what the kid needs for his individual self. Because everything that we do in the weight room is all individualized, okay? That is, from every single thing that we do, we scale back and make sure that if his force production is really high, but the way he's moving on the mount and the way he's moving weight is actually really, it's like to go to a velocity range focus. And one of the things we try to do is we try to scale back to be like, we're not going to give an extra, you know, like on the deadlift, we're not going to give an extra little hip hinge, like lunge forward with the glutes to be able to get into that range. We want to be able to have them moving the weight just like they normally would, mm-hmm. and giving realistic numbers. Because there's some things you can do with the bar to get them, you know, to get into that range.
Yeah, you can cheat it. Yeah.
You can kind of cheat it a little bit. So what we do is we make sure we're not trying to cheat it even a little bit, and making sure we're getting the right numbers. And, you know, it's one of those things that we like to monitor is the velocity percentage loss of each kid that they're losing.
So how can they maintain it, basically?
Yes. So how much percentage is he losing during his workouts? If we see – so we've had a kid, for example. I had a kid, the kid with the bitch, the Braden Babcock kid.
Okay.
He was 78 to 80 mile an hour. And we got him, get him moving. He got to his absolute strength number with the bench. So he was up on his bench.
295, right?
Yes. He was up on his bench, okay? And so then we said, okay, now we're going to go monitor the way how fast he's moving. So we got into that velocity range, and we can see consistently on his speed bench, he was going from 34% that he was losing from 1 week to another, and then we were saying, okay, this is what we're doing, this is the numbers, this is what's wrong. So we'll go back, we'll look at this, we'll get it going, we'll screen him again, and then we'll see, we'll work on the movements for that week or a few days, we'll work on those, strictly on those movements. And what we do for those movements is just trying to get him moving a lot better, maybe something locked back up or something that he's doing. We monitor the sleep schedule as well. These guys will give me their sleep and their nutrition tracker. So So I will monitor that, and we'll say, okay, maybe this day. So he got, but he woke up at 2 a.m. and then again at 3 a.m. So then we go back and we say, okay, this may be enabling him to be able to keep that velocity range. So then we scale back. We chart everything that this individual has. We'll chart everything down. We'll put it all into his programming, and then we'll go back, and then he'll test again for his velocity range and get into that post. We'll look and see and monitor that. So he went from a 34% loss that he was getting in his workouts to his final time that he was doing it, he was only losing 7.5% velocity on his speed bench. So the kid went 80-mile-an-hour fastball. It was really strong in his aptitude training. So he was getting really strong. And then
he's got all this force, but he's topping out at 80. And now you're putting him through this, and you're getting his power and his ability to produce speed up a little bit.
Yes, that's correct. We're getting his power and his speed up. So he's got those power and speeds up, and now we're monitoring the velocity percentage loss and what he's doing. And then now at the end of the season, he was up to 89 from the left side. So then, you know, we could say there, okay, we can go back in this summer. We could say, okay, here you go. This is a program that we need to do, and this is what we need to have to be able to have you to come back and be able to how are we going to improve on this? Okay, so if we are at, you know, if we're at this range moving this way, he's 40%. He was moving it at an average of 0.9 to actually a 1.1. Okay, so then we're going to go, okay, so we started the deload process of his training. So we're on the deload process. We're trying to get his movement right again. All right. We're trying to get him scaled back, get him well recovered, and get going. And to be able to do his movements to allow him, when he gets on that on-ramp phase in his lower intensity throwing, we are going to have him move heavier weight. So we're going to have him move heavier weight and try to increase on that absolute strength. And then when we scale back during our high intensity throwing, we will go and we'll work on the velocity. Usually during that time frame is we work on the velocity range, and we're tracking the velocity percentage loss, things like that.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. Just like, again, I always like to clarify for the listener, you know, when you're dealing with baseball and you're speaking of a pitcher in the specific example that you're using, the movement of throwing and movement of pitching, like, it's such a fast movement that you can have all the strength, but if you're not able to move it and display it in a fast manner, which is what you're working on with them at these lower percentages, you know, moving the bar as fast as possible and seeing how fast I can display my force, you're not going to throw hard. You need to be able to move, you know, all that strength in a fast way and be very efficient at that. So that's basically what you're trying to get all these kids to do.
Yeah, definitely. That's, you know, that's something that we're doing. And then, like you said, we are also, so during all this VPT and all this data and stuff, we actually kind of blend it with our plow care throwing as well.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask you about that, how you kind of blend it with, you know, the stuff that you're doing with the pitcher specifically.
Yeah, so what we're doing, so when we get all this VPT data and what we're doing on the mound is, when we get them moving a little bit faster, now, so we're gonna program the drop step and things like that to get that separation for the pelvic and the torso. And we're going to see how well the torso is going. So we'll do walking downhills as well. So we'll go walk. We'll go three steps down, turn and burn uphill for also the front leg. So if the kid's got a left hip issue, and then the torso has been moving really, really slow in the delivery, we'll be able to program those throws and see. Oh, that's what he was doing previously. That's what the velocity for the plow care throw was, each of those balls. Okay. And now with the velocity range, get him moving faster. Then we'll keep continuing those throws, and then we'll monitor the velocity range of those plow care throws. And that's how it's going to be. Okay. He's now getting his throw. He's getting
it. Pat, I'm losing you a little bit.
Okay.
I think I got you again. Go ahead.
Yeah, and we're just trying to get him to see if he's using that torso in his delivery. It's the same with the, you know, a guy that has a rear, he's got a hip problem. Say he's got in his right hip. Okay, and we're working on things in the weight room for this kid to be able to have him, you know, as far as handling mobility strength. So if we go through and look at that power output aspect and a velocity range aspect, we're seeing the numbers get going and going and going. So we'll measure it. So we're doing a step back, okay? And we're seeing the load. He's now, we'll see at the start where the kid's more inside foot dominant, and he's being very quad dominant. So we know that, okay, the rear hip is not handling any torque at all. He's not getting any knee, his knee's not getting any external rotation to it. So he doesn't have any of that rear torque into his delivery. So we know that the load is not coming into the glutes. It's coming into the quads. So we scale back and we look at the VPT numbers and we get him moving that in that direction, in that way, to be able to move and handle the strength on the power output side of it, to be able to handle being in that. So he's able to be in his back leg and hold it a little bit longer now because of the VPT data and some of the things that we're doing to look at, to monitor his mobility and see how well he's moving, the hips, and then how well he's, how much power he's putting out in those hips.
Yeah, so it's like you said, you know, you can cheat the VBT, you know, to use some more of the quad or whatever, and like a deadlift, let's say, to get the numbers up, but just like you are when you're pitching, you want to make sure that you're using the hips and the glutes only, that, you know, it's an effective, accurate number that you're getting, basically.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, we do not want to affect the data at all. Why?
Or and you don't want to alter the movement either. You want to make sure the movement is pure. You know, you know, we want to make sure the athlete's in their glute while they're pitching. We also want them there, you know, while they're doing that deadlift. Like, why would you want to work the quad if you're not going to use it when you pitch?
Yeah, definitely. You know, especially, you know, kids that are very quad dominant, we see in their delivery that obviously the load's not in the backside. And then when we get to the front leg, all of our guys they were quad dominant, okay? And all of them had front leg, lead leg block. The issue was getting real bad, okay? So, and another thing it was causing is we were causing a lot of arm drag in the delivery. And that's another thing that we monitor before we start picking up the, you know, plow care or weighted balls. That's why we go through these things, and we can, some of these kids that were stronger can go through the VPT because we can see that, you know, through video and through, you know, through the VPT data and through the screenings that, the kid's not having lead leg block, or the torso is open way early, and he's basically arm dragging through the zone. So now I can be like, okay, this is the way we're going to program him in the weight room to get him ready for his first on-ramp. So we have no guys that automatically will come in and be, we're plow care ready, we're weighted ball ready, we're ready to on-ramp, basically phase, and then get into our pull-down phase. We don't have guys like that. What we got to make sure is, and that's why we had zero arm injuries this year, it's because of the simple fact is we went through these numbers, we went through these screenings, and matched up individually to what each kid needs, and then from then on, this is what we need to do to fix you, and this is what we need to do to be on this, weighted ball program and things like that. That's the most important kids as well. And I think that's why people are like, oh, you guys just, you know, maybe you're just out there chunking them. Oh, and I think that's why we had, you know, such an increase in velocities. Like we had our Vargas kid. He was 73 innings, had 98 strikeouts. In the fall, this kid had a lot of arm issues and was throwing 75, 77. Real arm drag. Lead leg block was non-existent, okay? Lead leg block was non-existent, you know? And so we got in the weight room. He was a strong kid. He was another one of my strong kids. His number-wise were screaming, okay, this kid's really strong, but it really lacked in the velocity range.
Yeah, he wasn't moving it fast.
Yes, through his movement test, he was lacking in this. He was lacking through these issues. So then we monitor his velocity ranges for a full month. We monitor these ranges, and we screened three times. So after we did that, then we got back, and then we got into his on-ramp phase, and then he was ready to go. And that's why he went from 75, 77 to being, you know, absolutely, he was, you know, second team all-region pitcher that was 85 to 87. And I think that's why people are like, how are you getting these big velocity jumps in kids? Like, is it just weighted ball programming? And I'm like, that's probably 20 to 30%.
Yeah, of, that's to clean it all up, basically.
Yeah, that is, you know, it's you know, 20 to 30% of what we do. Of course, the overload balls do help with arm action and things like that after we get strong enough and actually we get, you know, we get in good movement, good mobility standing, that we're able to do some of that and clean up arm action with the overload overload balls. But, you know, to start, we want to make sure we're good in the weight room and we're good, we're moving at a good pace. That's going to make us successful. And for one, what's going to make the kids' arms be in good shape. That's what we want.
Yeah. Before full season. Let's take a step back for a second. Just, I really, like I said, I really try to make sure that the listener can understand. And I explained this previously, but if we're looking at velocity-based training as a whole, right? You're mentioning a lot of these guys have the strength right off the bat. So in terms of velocity-based training, when you're towards the force side of things, like when I say towards the force side, movements that are, you know, predicated by force alone, you're looking at speeds of, would we say, 0.3 to 0.5 meters per second?
Yes.
So you're really working a lot. Like, a lot of these kids have that base where they're doing well in those, like, slower ranges of the speed. You need to work them more in that, like, 0.8, 0.9, 1.0, you know, making sure that we have all this brute strength. Now we have to turn it into being able to move it faster and, you know, doing lesser percentages of your one rep max at faster speeds can help that. And then you're kind of putting a bow on it by doing the plyo care and doing all the stuff with the weighted balls to make sure that the delivery is efficient and clean and can use all of that strength and power.
Yes. Yes, that is correct. You know, that's really big for us to be able to know, you know, each kid also, everybody, you know, the strength speed phase can be from 0.8 to 1. But most of my guys, so they can have an average of 0.84 or 0.87, okay? But they can have a peak of 1.08 or something like that. You know, it all depends. Every the day they come in, it's all going to depend on the way their sleep and the way their nutrition tracker set up.
Oh, for
and
sure. Also, it's a total package, yeah.
Yeah, and then also, what did we have the day? What did we do the first day during weight training or last week? The previous week if we're starting out on an earlier week day. What did we do in that day, and what did the numbers tell us that the kid was, he was, let's say he lost, he was at over 30% velocity loss, you know, and then the next time he rolls into the weight room.
So what you're saying, not to interrupt you, but what you're saying when you say that is, let's say they were moving X amount of weight at a certain speed this week. Next week they may lose, like they may take that same weight, but now they're moving it slower, basically.
Yeah.
So that's how you're measuring, yeah. You know, carry over from week to week, and can they maintain that velocity is what you're doing.
Yes. Yes, we want to make sure we're maintaining that velocity because it will conflict with the throwing program if he is on a pull down phase, and we want to make sure he is good and ready. So if he's losing a lot of velocity percentage loss leading up to his pull down phase, I don't want to start the next day be like, you got to pull down. You know what I mean? Today's your pull down day. Well, no, because he lost this amount of percentage during his workout and previous is workout leading up to it. So we're not going to let him pull down, you know, a couple days after or the day after, whatever his program is set up, and have him go. What we're going to do is we'll dial it down. We'll look at the numbers. We'll look at the sleep. We'll look at the nutrition. And then we'll go from there if the kid needs an extra recovery day so we can have more. Obviously, the numbers are not going to be 100%, you know, at least on spot on. The data's, you know, very spot on. But we want to give the kid the best chance to PR.
Yes. Make sure they're ready. Day.
Yeah. Yeah, we want to give the kids the best chance to PR during their reload days.
It's just like, I'm not going to have, if a kid is training for speed and his sprint, I'm not going to have him try to, you know, set a new PR with his 10-yard sprint if I test his vertical beforehand and I see that his, you know, energy levels and everything, his power output is down. It makes no sense.
Yes, yes, that is spot on is what we're trying to do.
In the baseball sense, basically.
Yes.
It's like, why am I going to have a kid go pull down if he's not ready? Like, I could see if he's ready or not.
Yeah, we just got to make sure, like, the kids are ready and they're ready to go, you know, because it's a big deal for them. And it's also a reason why I think velocity-based training with junior pull-down phases is so important to monitor the velocity loss percentage and the power output percentages and how much power output and force you're putting out. Because just like we went over, it's going to give the best kids the best and be ready to go, especially when you're getting in season and trying to develop in season. So when you're in season programming, we can make sure we on the days and what we need a couple extra recovery days to be at and be at their honest. Obviously, they would. We're not getting days. Just everything, you know. We're very confident we can get you up every single time you roll out there. But we want to give you the best possible chance that your body is in good standing from the numbers that we're putting in the weight room. So when you go out there, you're going to be at close to your best is what we want to do. We want to have you spot on with your body, and we're going to take less stress from the arm and have your body the right way. Not only your arm, but also your overall body, because as you know, that's going to pay more dividends of being taking less stress off the arm than obviously just detecting. If I just detected the arm, that's good. But what about the body leading up to his outing? You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. You got cut off just a little bit there, so I want to just kind of summarize what you were saying. Again, just reiterating, you're basically just saying like, hey, we have this VBT. We can use this as a tool to, you know, see where power output is. You know, have it as a gauge of where the athlete is specifically, you know, and that given week, are they, you know, up to their levels where they usually are? And then it kind of lets us be more effective in, you know, trying to PR or matching things up with a throwing program per se, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's right.
And even beyond just baseball, like for any athletes who don't play baseball or coaches who don't work with baseball specifically, velocity-based training can be a gauge for anybody, whether it's lower body speed, just general power output itself. It could be a great way to determine readiness and preparation in terms of the athlete's body in general for, you know, what it may require in their training or their sport for that given time.
Yes. Yep.
So it goes beyond just even the training portion. It's like, this is a really good way that I can kind of gauge preparation and readiness for my athletes on a week-by-week basis.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, one of the things that's very important, you know, to get you guys started on VPD is obviously we want to get a move-in screening real fast, as fast as possible as we can with your athletes. But also, we want to make sure we're not – so if you go through the movement screening and we're taking care of those problems, and then we can go to our absolute strength phase and improve on that and get them going and get them, you know, a little bit stronger. And as they're opening up, through their movements and through their mobility, hopefully that, you know, that absolute strength is getting have a more overall increase.
So for then sure.
Once we get him at his plateau or whatever he's got in that body for right now, then we can go into a velocity-based training aspect of things. So during our absolute strength phase, we do monitor how much power output they're putting out on those lifts because we want to see – okay, if this kid's getting, like we talked about previously, earlier in this podcast, that if we see that the kid's numbers are going up, but the power output he's putting out is not, we got to dial it back and program, like, okay, let's go back to the screening, and let's go back to everything that we looked at previously, and then let's try to figure out what is the problem that we're having, why we're not getting that power output to have an overall increase. So then once he's doing that, then we go in and have that velocity range VPT style focus.
Yeah, so it's just like trying to see like, hey, this guy's putting out all the strength there, but, you know, again, he's not moving, you know, the weight with enough speed or enough power. So we have to dial it down now and get him working in those lower ranges to build that, capability.
Yes, definitely, yes.
So let me ask you this. There's this giant misconception in this, people being afraid of, the monster under their bed in terms of, lifting heavy and intense strength training with throwing athletes. Dispel that for me real quick. Obviously, we've talked about it a lot, but, why is that something people shouldn't be afraid of? Or should be? Why shouldn't they be afraid of it?
Yeah, I honestly, it's anything, any program that you're doing, whether you're a weighted ball guy or you're a non-weighted ball guy, we are putting kids out on the mound constantly, right? So we are constantly beating up every time out there throwing or anything they're doing during those days. So why wouldn't we get the body stronger and moving the correct way to be able to handle how much support is put? So if we can get the body more stronger and be able to build less stress from that arm, especially if we get screenings and it allows us to help the athletes to move a lot better. So it's absolutely a must for, even if you're, like I said, you're a non, I'm a non-weighted ball guy or I am a weighted ball guy or things like that. It's very, very key to be able to have that for these guys so they can be, we can hold something, we can be into the backside a little bit longer because we do have that mobility strength, from strength training.
Yeah, and it's like you said, with pitching, you're putting all these stresses on your arm at such a high velocity. If you can handle that, you can handle weightlifting. And furthermore, if you can get better at handling weightlifting, you're going to be better off handling the stresses of pitching.
Yes, definitely.
So why are we scared of lifting when we put all our, all this stress on our body pitching? It's such a high intensity, high impact movement. We have to lift to be able to support that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk bench press a little bit. What have you seen in terms of improvements with your pitchers, with the bench, and, how could the bench press, benefit some of the listeners if they're not already using it?
Yeah, definitely. So we did some really focus on peak power output percentages in the 80 to 90% of our one rep max, and then we did it with peak fastball velocity. So our guy that topped out at 94 this year, he was at, his peak power output on the bench was 6,953, okay? Our guy that was 93 was 6,875, okay? Our guy that topped out at 86 was actually in better movement and mobility standing than our guy that was topping out at 94, but our guy that was topping out at 94, his bench, he was a 265 bench guy, 275 bench at 190 pounds, but he was, this is where we were talking about previously about the power output numbers. If that power output number is increasing, then we know that, this kid's getting real strong in the bench right now, and we know that the correlation for us is it is a really Kyle Rogers and all those guys say it's a really bang for your buck type of lift, I think. And it's something that's very underrated and something that's, if you get more information on it and you get, more into the movement and mobility aspect of things for it, to get ready for this, for the bench press, that it's going to absolutely a big time lift for your, pitchers or any guy that's in the baseball world for sure.
Yeah. It's like Kyle made a good point when he was on my podcast, we were talking about it. And you alluded to it. But we've just talked about stress on the arm while you're throwing. The bench press does such a good job of replicating some of the, needed areas while you pitch in terms of the shoulder and the chest and, the tricep and everything, and the amount of rapid force that gets produced while you pitch. If you can repeat that or get that better with the bench, there's a strong correlation in improving your velocity.
Yes, yes, definitely. And we have, like I said, we did a study on it that we did with our guys, and we were able to monitor all of that. And then we were also able to monitor the peak velocity range that he was actually moving his 90% of one rep max, how fast he was moving that. So we were able to detect that, and it's a very strong correlation that, through movement and
I lost you for a second. Could you repeat that?
Yeah. I mean, it's very important to be, and I keep going back screens because obviously we wouldn't put a kid onto the bench press and say, go just bang out some heavy weight, go do some heavy bench, just banging out. But he's got some shoulder issues, okay? We want to make sure the mobility in the shoulder, in his chest, for the trunk, in his trunk, that it's in good standing before we get and develop the power output and the things that we need overall in the bench press is in good standing before we tell the kids, hey, you go and just bang out some heavy bench. I think that's where it gets all the bad rep is kids are just jumping into this heavy bench, but we're not looking at his screenings at all. We're not giving any screenings at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like reckless if you're not doing that, but if you are, there's a lot of benefits for sure.
Definitely.
So let me ask you this. Just if you were to try to summarize, this whole episode, it's a lot about velocity-based training. That's like the theme of the episode for the listener. Why you would recommend it and what you think are the biggest positives that come from it. What would you say?
For VPT,
just in general.
Oh, the VP in general. Okay, so... why do I think it's overall successful and things like that? Because the way we programming it, like we talked previously, getting kids ready, we're able to monitor the force production. It's able to help the kids that are having issues during the screenings or the deficiencies that we're able to monitor it a lot more during our VPT aspect of things versus most is we're trying to move the bar speed fast. That is correct. But we're monitoring different levels of things to be able to benefit kids into their outings, into their pull down, below days, into their, their absolute strength or whatever phase they're going through. It's able to help those guys in each of those aspects, of what we're doing in training wise. That's why I think, VPT and things like that, it's just something that, if it's done correctly, I took years of reading this and picking a lot of guys' brains on this topic to be able to run with this. So this is the first year I was able to run through it fully and have all the data behind it because I've done a lot of reading and a lot of study. So if I were doing this, I would definitely talk to some guys that are really programming this in the correct fashion of the way. And it, honestly, if you can do that and study upon it, it's something that is going to take your athletes to a whole different ballpark and a whole nother level.
Yeah, so you're getting the twofold benefit. Not only are you, finding ways to measure, improving, areas that are lacking in an athlete, whether it's force or velocity and getting those better, but it's also a great gauge for, preparation and readiness and kind of monitoring where your athletes are throughout, the season, the off season, things like that. I think that's, very well said.
Yes.
So, Pat, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I think that was awesome. We've just got a lot cover for the listeners. Just anybody who's new to velocity-based training or, does it a little bit but wants to get more into it and kind of hear the benefits of someone who's had a lot of success using it, I think that was great. I will, plug your social media, especially your Twitter, in the show notes and on Twitter when I post the episode. If anyone wants to see what you're doing with your athletes and how you're getting them better with this method of training. So thank you again for coming on. I really appreciate it. And that was great.
I think so. I appreciate it for having me on, Jerry. It was a lot good to get that information out. And I, hope anybody that's looking for anything to just, feel free to reach out. you know, to me and some other guys, especially you, or things like that, that are doing velocity-based training and help you get a better overall idea and understanding of it. But I really appreciate it.
No problem at all. Thanks, Pat. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, alrighty.
Thank you for listening to the Muscles and Management Podcast, brought to you by Challenger Strength. I'm your host, Jerry DiFilippo, helping you build your body and your business.